Yeah, and then I do like a quiz as well, like a Christmas-based quiz with all the questions are based on Christmas. There's 10 questions every week, yeah. Now, do you know what? I turn my score like 7 or 8, and normally I score like 1 or 2, but I just pretend I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, mate, I've got to go. No, I'm going to record the podcast now, yeah. Yeah, I'll see you next week. Take care, mate. Bye.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just seeing a trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. We haven't done the interactive bit for ages. I keep forgetting to do it. Do you want to do it now? Here we go. I don't care if you want to. We're doing it anyway. This is the interactive bit. What do you think of it? Well, that was rude. And scene. Okay, so I don't think I have got some housekeeping. I can't remember what it is, so let's pretend I haven't got any housekeeping. Actually, I've got one bit of housekeeping. So I don't know if you remember last week, I made a joke about housekeeping and then I pretended I was doing the hoovering. And then at the end of the episode, I recommended a podcast for you, the Tim Vine Chat Show. And I can't believe I did this. I stole that joke from the Tim Vine Chat Show. And then I recommended that show in the same episode. Like, if I'd done it a couple of episodes before I recommended that show, it wouldn't have been quite so bad. But shame on me, boys and girls. Shame on me. Anyway. This is the show. It's starting. Oh, it's already started, actually. I was going to say it's starting now, but it's already started. It started. What do you think of it so far? As bad as that? Yeah, that's right. Let's do this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, in the last episode, Bob Baker mentioned novelty Christmas songs in the UK, and I'm sure you're familiar with this one, but you might not know much about it, especially if you're not in the UK. And I'm going to talk this week about probably the worst novelty song to get to the Christmas number one, and it is called Mr. Blobby. I'm going to play a bit for you now. So, Mr. Blobby was a character on a TV show called Noel's House Party. If you're not in the UK, you never would have heard of Noel's House Party. It was hosted by a chap called Noel Edmonds, and it was Saturday night compulsive viewing. It was the most popular show on Saturday nights in the UK, and it was like a variety show where he'd have acts on there, he'd do sort of interviews, lots of funny games and skits, that sort of crap. And I wasn't a massive fan of it. It was always a bit cheesy for me, really. But one of the segments he had was what was originally called the Gotcha Oscars, and this was kind of like a candid camera kind of prank show. But Noel Edmonds would only prank celebrities, and every episode there'd be a bit where they'd show the footage of some celebrity being wound up, and at the end of it they'd get their Gotcha Oscar. It's quite interesting, actually, because originally the Gotcha statue was like a hand holding an Oscar. That's what the statue they'd get would be, their Gotcha Oscar. But then there was some legal action taken by the Academy, the Film Academy, and then he had to change it just to the Gotchas, not the Gotcha Oscars. And instead of the fist holding a Oscar statue, it was a fist holding a bloke, like a stick man that was trying to run. Yeah, just interesting point. Anyway, one of the wind-ups they used to do with celebrities was they'd get a celebrity, and the celebrity would think they're going to be on an established children's TV show called Mr. Blobby. A bit like Barney the Dinosaur, a bit like that, imagine that. So Mr. Blobby is like a pear-shaped costume made of rubber, and it's pink with bright yellow spots all over it. And he couldn't talk normally, he'd just talk like this. Yeah, that's Mr. Blobby. And he was completely naked, apart from a bow tie, which is quite the fashion statement, if you ask me. Anyway, these celebrities would be on the show, and Mr. Blobby, the guy in the suit, would keep knocking stuff over and generally annoying the celebrity until the celebrity, like, getting to the point where I think one time someone was like stamped on his foot because they were getting really annoyed with him, like when the cameras weren't rolling, when he thought the cameras weren't rolling. You know, he'd be knocking stuff over and the celebrity's trying to do the show properly and Mr. Blobby's making a tit of himself. It was all hilarious, boys and girls. It was quite interesting how they did it, actually, because originally, like when they'd be rehearsing, you'd have this guy and he'd be down to his waist in the suit, and then they'd go and put the full suit on and Noel Edmonds would actually be in the suit then. So then they do their hilarious antics. You could look it up on YouTube if you want to see some of them. They do the antics. At the end of it, he'd take off the head and it'd be like, oh, it's you, Noel Edmonds, you cheeky old shit. That's Mr. Blobby. He became a staple of the show. After the first season, obviously everyone had heard of Mr. Blobby. So in the following seasons, he just became a character that would come on and generally tit about, really. But he was ridiculously popular. And so they decided to milk that as much as they could and release a Christmas single, which is what I played for you earlier. Do you want to hear a bit more? No? Tough. No hill too high, no desert too dry, no road too long, no tide too strong, no bridge too far, he's got a car. No slope too steep, no thought too deep, no star too bright, no squeeze too tight, no tail too tall, no cat too cool, no bass too low, he'll give it a go. No end to his talents, no sense of melody. Here's the thing. What I really want to talk about is the race to the Christmas number one, because it's quite interesting. Originally, the song that looked like it might be the favourite to get to Christmas number one was Meatloaf's I Would Do Anything For Love. Now, that had already been at number one for 7 weeks, but then Mr. Blobby came out and knocked it off the top spot. So now we've got Mr. Blobby at number one 3 weeks before Christmas. Now, the biggest pop band in the UK at the time was a band called Take That. Just recently, there's been a brand new documentary about Take That, and you might not be familiar with them in other countries. I know they were popular in Europe. I think they were fairly popular in Australia. They had a top 10 hit in the US. It was five boys. One of them, Robbie Williams, quit the band, went on to become a very, very successful solo artist. Still popular to this day. Take That split up eventually. Then they got back together again, and they're still together now, but only as a three-piece. Another one of them quit to go and become a recluse, which is an interesting job choice. Back then, though, this was Take That in their first flush of fame, and every song that they released was going straight to number one. They released a song for Christmas. It was called Babe. Have a listen to this. Yeah, it even had like a snowy video as well. This was destined to be the Christmas number one, and in it comes and knocks Mr. Blobby off the top spot. There it is, boys and girls. This year's Christmas number one is guaranteed to be Take That. Or so you'd think. The following week, who's back at number one? Oh, it's the tit in the pink suit. Yeah, Mr. Blobby knocked Take That off the number one spot, became the Christmas number one, and then spent another week at number one the week after that as well. 3 weeks at number one. And you know what, boys and girls? It wasn't a Christmas song. It was just a very bad song. So the song was written and produced by David Rogers and Paul Shaw, and it became the sixth best-selling song of 1993. Now, luckily for me, I was travelling at the time. I went to Australia when I was 18. So, yeah, I never got to hear anything about that until I came back. It was very interesting. Very interesting indeed. The video, if you want to watch it, is just crap, really. It's got a few celebrities on it. Will Carlin's on there, actually. Will Carlin was one of the celebrities that got gotcha'd when Mr. Blobby was doing, like I was talking about earlier. Yeah, there's other people on it as well that you probably wouldn't recognise if you're not from the UK. Carol Vorderman, heard of her? Yeah, she's on it as well. So that's pretty much it. I don't want to go into it a great deal because it's an awful song. In fact, it was voted the worst Christmas number one of all time. But the story doesn't end there. Because Mr. Blobby was still very, very popular. They opened theme parks around Mr. Blobby. He also had a wife and he had a young child. It was just something. And in 1995, 2 years later, they decided to release another song by Mr. Blobby, but this time it was a Christmas song. Yeah, and it was called Christmas in Blobbyland. So here we go, boys and girls. Once again, the race for the top of the charts is on, and Mr. Blobby comes in at number 36. And didn't get any higher. That was it. Yeah, by that point, people had lost interest. I think by that point, people had actually turned around and gone, hang on a minute, what? Why are we, what? This is shit. Why are we actually, this, what? No, bollocks. I think that's what happened. Anyway, thing is, most people were thinking that at the start, but I guess a large percentage of the population weren't thinking that until the end. Yeah. So let me play a little bit of Christmas in Blobbyland. It's an awful song. An awful, awful song. But there you go, boys and girls. So I'm sure listening to Christmas podcasts, especially if you listen to British Christmas podcasts, you've heard about Mr. Blobby. I hope I've shed a little bit more light on the subject. Just to finish it off, Mr. Blobby is still not popular, but still a recognised character. And there is a chap that wears the suit now, and he's licensed out by whoever to perform as Mr. Blobby. And he does appearances on TV occasionally and crap like that. Yeah, there you go. Mr. Blobby, can we forget that happened? Let's do this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Mora, Sweden? Sweden is home to another of Santa's purported residences. If you ask the people in Dalarna, you will learn that Santa Claus lives in Mora and nowhere else. The first snowflakes fall over the fairy tale land of Tomteland. Santa's world and feverish activity prevails already in the main cabin. The wish lists lie in heaps. The elves are running over each other, and the mischievous trolls enviously peek through the windows. But Santa is also busy trying to teach Santa power, dance around the Christmas tree, offer theater, and spend time with the trolls, the witch, the good fairy, and all other friends in fairyland. The fairy tale Santa's Village is framed by the Gazunda Mountains, just outside of Mora. As soon as one enters, the cold winter air becomes filled with magic and adventure. At first glance, it may seem quiet and peaceful, but not a day goes by without losing control of the trolls. It is the location of Santaland, or Tomteland, a glittering amusement park with a fairy tale focus. This is a theme park specifically centered around Santa Claus, overseeing a land of mythical characters from trolls and gnomes to fairy and elves. Anyone who is curious about what is really happening in the Enchanted Forest can get lessons in trollology, and you can learn about Santa's magical power. Also, this year, Fairy Tale Santa's Village presents a very fun and popular interpretation of the children's theater Hansel and Gretel. In Fairy Tale, Santa's trolls lurk in the forest, and forest gnomes are peering from behind the stumps. The witch and good fairy are playing with the younger guests, and there is also the snowman Dusty and a cozy snow monster Snowdrift. Every day offers an atmospheric outdoor theater where winter fairy tale Sparkle and her friends look for the Christmas star, a mysterious, cold, and magical star whose forces are needed to save the Winter Queen. You can pay a visit to Santa or stop by at Mrs. Claus's Cafe for some festive refreshments. You can meet Santa and his helpers, as well as attend Christmas shows and visit Santa's workshop and even see his sleigh. Santa is an extremely popular guy. Every year, about 400,000 letters arrive for Santa Claus. Now, if you know of another location with a little Christmas gnome, you describe it to Jack, he'll imagine it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Well, boys and girls, I don't know if you noticed that, but Bob was pissed. Yeah, and I'm not joking. He would never do that on his podcast, but it's absolutely fine to do it on my podcast. Regular listeners will be like, what's up with him? He's not ill, he's actually pissed. He sent me an email saying, yeah, no more pub nights for me when I'm recording. Unbelievable! Unbelievable! I mean, to be honest, I quite liked it. I enjoyed it a lot, but unbelievable nonetheless. Bob will be back in a bit. Let's hope he's sobered up by then. Goodness. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's last episode scores. And in last place, not that I normally do the places, I just give the score. But she did come last because only one person got this. With 2 points, two measly points, was the wonderful Pamela Wootton. I'll just say your name a few more times, Pamela. Know how much you love that. This is like a consolation for scoring so low. Here we go. Pamela. 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 There we go. With 3 points, we've got Jack Unverfirth and Kevin Church. So I should have mentioned this at the start of the show during the housekeeping, which I forgot about. Kevin Church sent me a video of the route he takes when he walks to work, and he actually walks past the lot where they're selling the Christmas trees in the film A Christmas Story. Yeah, and also he showed me the skyline and one of the buildings from the film. It's fantastic. Yeah, and he cut in the film into the video so I could see what he was talking about. Really cool that was. Like every day, bit of Christmas every day. Nice one. With 4 points, we have Guy Sawyer, Sean Sotka. Do you know what? Last episode, I was talking about CPP, but his name's Sean. It's like I'd completely bloomin' forgotten. It's very embarrassing. This is Sean Sotka from the Christmas Podcast podcast. Yeah, I was even on his show. We've met. He's a wonderful man. And I'd completely forgotten that was his email address. Sorry about that, Sean. But they did put Sean Sotka this time, just to remind me. Thanks, buddy. Also with 4 points, with his lowest score of all time, shame on you, Mike Westfall from the Advent Calendar House podcast, and Mary Polte. With half a point more, that's 4.5 points, we've got Todd Polte. With 5 points, Caroline Cole, Benji Pearson, Nettie Tabeau, and David Ferguson. 6 points, we've got John Gomez. 7 points, we've got Barbara Wright and Stephen Beach. I think I scored 7 last week. With 8 points, though, 8 points, we've got Martin Goodman, very good work, and also Jennifer Kay, who did fantastic again. So well done, you two. Congratulations for being wonderful. Right, now it's this episode's quiz. Here's the deal. I don't have to keep reminding you, but I'm doing it anyway. Last episode, the way my book is set up is all the quizzes are on different themes. Last one was about drinks. Now we're on to festive feasts. And here's the thing. There's 3 levels, like easy, medium, hard. This one's meant to be the easy one. Well, I'm ashamed to say I didn't do that good. Here's the questions. Question number 1. What pies are most popular at Christmas? We'll say in the UK. Okay, this is a UK-based quiz. But what pies are most popular at Christmas? Question number 2. What non-edible plants are sometimes put on top of a Christmas pudding for decoration? What non-edible plant is sometimes put on top of a Christmas pudding for decoration? Next one. This is question number 3, for those of you that are keeping count. A southern African delicacy called mopane is which of the below? Is it chocolate? Is it lamb? Is it wildebeest? Or is it worm? Okay, which one of those are they going to eat at Christmas? I hope at Christmas. Otherwise, what's the point in the question? Next one. What new to him, it's not new, it's not a new drink, but it was new to this guy. What new to him fizzy drink does Buddy the Elf enjoy in the movie Elf? Yeah, what drink is he drinking? And he does a massive burp at the end, lowering the tone. And he doesn't even say, excuse me. He says, did you hear that? What drink's he drinking? Next one. Turon is often served in Spain at Christmas, but what is it? What is it? Is it a drink? Is it fruit? Is it nougat? Or is it a sherbet? Which one of those? Okay, next one's a true or false question. Beetroot soup is popular as a Christmas dish in Mexico. Is that true or is that false? In Mexico, are they loving their beetroot soup or do they never have it at all? I don't know. Do you? Next one. Turkey is the most popular meat on Christmas tables in the UK. What is the second most popular? I'm not bothered about the first one. We all know it's turkey. Turkey's the man, man. But what's second? But in Germany, this is the next question. See how I segued into this. In Germany, which bird is it popular to eat at Christmas? I'll give you a clue. Turkey ain't the one. And right, we're on to number 9 now. Does plum pudding contain plums? Does it? Now, just as a little aside, boys and girls, plums is often a term used to refer to someone's testicles in the UK. Now, I'm not asking you if plum pudding contains testicles, because I'm pretty sure it doesn't, or at least I hope it doesn't, because I have a nice big slice every year. Okay, and the final question. Approximately how many mince pies are eaten in Britain each year? Is it 781, 781,000, 78 million, or 781 million? Okay, there you go. Now, here, boys and girls, are your answers. And just before we move on, right, I don't want you... You've got to stick with the answer you chose originally. You can't go, oh yeah, I would have said that. Or you can't have like 2 answers in your mind and go, yeah, I would have gone with one of those 2. I'm not having none of that, okay? Right? Because I didn't do particularly well in this episode's quiz. So you're going to give me the proper score, all right? So whatever you've thought of, you stick with those blooming answers and don't start changing them, okay? Right. What pies are most popular at Christmas? Mince pies. Easy one. 2. What non-edible plant is put on top of a Christmas pudding for decoration? Sometimes. It says sometimes. We never have it on ours. Holly. Easy one. Right. Question number 3. A southern African delicacy called mapane is which of the blow? Is it chocolate, lamb, wildebeest or worm? Well, everyone knows that's worm. Do you know what? It is worm. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what? I went for wildebeest. I'm furious. Okay, what new to him fizzy drink does Buddy the Elf enjoy in the movie Elf? Well, that's Coca-Cola, isn't it? Wonderful bit of product placement there, boys and girls. Okay, Tujon is often served in... Did you hear the pronunciation of that? I bet I couldn't do that again if I tried. I'm not even going to try. Is often served in Spain at Christmas. But what is it? What is that? Well, is it a drink? Is it a fruit? Is it nougat or is it sherbet? Well, I actually knew this one and I think I've talked about it in a previous episode. And it is, boys and girls, nougat. Next one. True or false? Beetroot soup is a popular Christmas dish in Mexico. Well, this is a bit of a tricky one, actually, boys and girls. Because no, it's not, which is what I said. It's false. But it is a popular Christmas dish in Poland. Yeah. Didn't know that, did you? Well, maybe you did. Next one. Turkey is the most popular meat on Christmas tables in the UK. What is the second most popular? Well, if you put beef like I did, you'd be wrong. Apparently it's chicken. Let me tell you a story about this, boys and girls. When we have Christmas dinner around my mum's house, when I was younger, there was 5 of us. And then I got older and my brothers moved away or had their own families and that. And before my wife and I got married, we'd still go around. So it'd just be 4 of us, not a big dinner. So my mum's thinking, what's the point in buying a massive turkey for Christmas if there's only 4 people eating it? So she'd buy chicken. Now, here's the thing. I found out about this. I'm like, you're not buying a chicken. You buy a turkey, mum. It's Christmas. You buy a turkey. We had a bit of a mild argument about it, but she gave in. Anyway, the next year, she bought a chicken. She said it was turkey. It's pointless arguing. I was angry on the inside. I didn't bother making a thing about it. And now, whenever we go around there, because we take it in turns. One year they'll come here. Next year we'll go there. And now, we'll go there. And I know we're getting chicken. And there's like 6 of us now. So there's more now than there was when I was a kid. And she's making blooming chicken. And it ain't right, boys and girls. It ain't right. Although that is the second most popular meat. I was short as beef. Short as beef. Okay, next one. In Germany, which bird is it popular to eat at Christmas? I didn't even have a guess at this one. Didn't even have a guess. I'm there thinking, probably not chicken. I sort of thought, well, could it be partridge? Because, you know, Christmas, innit? That's goose. And I thought, oh yeah, Christmas. Let's face it, our British Christmas really comes from the German Christmas, doesn't it? That's where originally a lot of our traditions came from there, thanks to Prince Albert back in Victorian times. Okay, number 9. Does plum pudding contain testicles? No, sorry, does plum pudding contain plums? Well, here's the thing. No, it doesn't. But the reason it's called plum pudding is because back in the old days, pretty much any dried fruit, like prunes, which is a dried plum, or raisins, you know, or sultanas, they were called a plum. So that's why it's called plum pudding. And they do still contain raisins, but we don't use that term to describe raisins or sultanas anymore. So you're not having a point if you put yes, because it's no. And the last question, approximately how many mince pies are eaten in Britain each year? It's the thing, right? Each of these has got 781, apart from C, which is 78 million. There's not, you'd think it'd be 78,100,000, but they didn't put the one in there. And that should have been a clue to me because I went for that. I thought, well, there's about 70 million people in the UK. A lot of people don't actually like mince pies. My wife doesn't. My daughters don't really care for them. So I'm thinking, yeah, maybe it's like 1 per person. What was I thinking? It's 10 per person or more than 10 per person. It's 781 million. Again, I made a tit of myself. I only scored 6 this week, boys and girls. 6. Bit annoyed about that. And when I say a bit annoyed, can you tell from my tone that it's not just a bit? It's a lot. Who's going to put worm for that blooming South African delicacy? Worm. Goodness me. I bet someone out there scored loads more than me. I bet you're proud of yourself, aren't you? Send in your scores, boys and girls. Do it. Do it now. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know what we like to say at the Tiki Bar? It may be a philosophy test, but it doesn't matter. Either the glass is half full or it's half empty. All it means to us is that there is more room to drink. So I recently revisited the UK Office Christmas special 22 years after it aired. I mean, I don't know why I was watching it. I'm in the US, it's March, It is really starting to warm up outside, and we've just had daylight savings. But it did give me an opportunity to consider how the two series are a microcosm of Do You Hear What I Hear? Watching both shows provides insight into the cultural differences between the two countries. My first thought, man, you have to give Ricky Gervais such credit. The mockumentary style, where the characters talk to the camera, it was initially popularized in the UK Office, and now it dominates so many other sitcoms. I mean, for both Office versions, be they US or UK, they make the absolute best use of this format. The success of the US series has been huge. It ran for 9 seasons, and it may even overshadow the UK original. However, despite its copycat origins, The Office US does not try to be The Office UK. The original show is very much British in feel. There is a distinct pessimism in the characters that tomorrow will be no better than today, and is probably worse. The original captures that sarcastic, dry British humor, and in comparison, the US show is so American because every character, no matter how knocked down by life, is always optimistic. In the US version, everything is okay now, and it will be okay tomorrow, if not better. I mean, the UK version uses irony and is cynical, whereas in contrast, US humor and tone is broader and more sympathetic. Now, I was considering all of this when David Brent in the UK Christmas special said the following: they're all half me age, they're taking the mick. At this point, my Do You Hear What I Hear whistle started sounding. Despite all these broad considerations about different societal attitudes, I was on the hunt. What is taking the mick? I can't even find a comparable word in the US. Taking the mick is a slang term that originated in the UK and describes a situation where someone is mocking or making fun of another person. It is used in a variety of contexts, from playful teasing between friends to more malicious bullying type behavior. At its core, to take a mick is a way of expressing the act of teasing or mocking someone, often in a light-hearted manner. But what is the origin of this phrase? It is sometimes reported that the phrase originates as a variant of the slang phrase, take the piss. Now, it is described how this phrase came about as Cockney rhyming slang. Although it is not Christmas-oriented, at some point, Jack just has to explain to us this whole Cockney rhyming concept. I know it's not related to Christmas, but it may be considered under that umbrella of total Christmas. But as I understand it, the rhyming slang replaces words with rhyming words or phrases. So taking the piss originated in the UK as a colloquial term in the 1930s. The original purpose seems to ridicule a person for being full of himself, so one would take the piss out of them. Taking the mick came not long afterwards. It was considered a euphemism for taking the piss. In the rhyming slang, to take the Mickey Bliss meant the same thing as to take the piss. The phrase taking the mick is thought to have originated from a popular Irish comedian named Michael J. Mick Malloy. Malloy was known for his irreverent humor and for making fun of others in his comedy routines. Over time, The phrase taking the mick came to be associated with this type of humor and behavior. The phrase to take the piss out of someone, or to take the mickey, or the mick out of someone, appears to be based on an analogy between deflating the bladder and deflating false pride. The term is used in a derogatory manner to describe someone who is being mean or hurtful to others. Despite the negative connotations, taking the mick remains a popular phrase throughout Britain. We really ought to consider whether taking the mick is a phrase that Americans might want to try. It is a way to roast your friends and family, but in a polite way, so we can all go out to the pub afterward. Cheers and happy Christmas.
That's a really interesting one, that was, because I always thought taking the mick or taking the mickey came first and taking the piss was just people being rude. But it's actually taking the mickey came after, because it's rhyming slang for piss. Taking the mickey is what people used to say, but taking the mick is like a shorter version of that. Yeah, there's other ways of saying it as well. Oh, he's taking the piss. Oh, he's taking the mick. Oh, he's taking the rise. You might hear that as well, taking the rise out of someone. Yeah, and it's not just gentle ribbing or having a laugh with someone. It's actually also if you think someone's taking advantage of you. It's like, are you taking a piss, mate? You might say that. Anyway, that's a fantastic one. Great work, Bob. Great work as ever. Do you know what? He sent me two versions of that one. And the first one was a right mess, where he kept like having to start the lines again and hadn't edited it out. And you can tell, I don't know if you could tell, boys and girls. I wouldn't have known. I would have thought he was just tired. But he'd had a heavy night, apparently, before we recorded those. So I'm just glad you got him in, to be honest, Bob. Well done, buddy. He's a great guy. And he's also got a great podcast. So check it out. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans. And it's about festive foreign films. Simple as that. I know you'll enjoy it. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this. This is what we call a Muppet Christmas Show. Boys and girls, occasionally, when I'm not doing a version of a Christmas carol, I like to do a Muppet Christmas special. And this episode, we're looking at Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. And this was created nearly 50 years ago. Yeah, back in 1977. And it was first shown on CBC television on December the 4th, 1977. Now, boys and girls, if you're based in the UK, unless you listen to a lot of Christmas podcast, you were probably never aware of it. I wasn't aware of it for many, many years, and then I really started getting into Christmas and started buying Christmas DVDs, so I had lots to watch every year, and I found it on eBay. And this was before I started listening to Christmas podcasts, but I found it a few years ago, maybe about 10 years ago, I bought it on eBay. So I've got my DVD copy. I'm guessing it's been shown on TV in the UK, but I've never seen it. So it was directed by Jim Henson. Now, it's based on the book of the same name by Russell Hoban and illustrated by Lillian Hoban. And I'm pretty much going to run through the story of it for you. So if you've not seen it, you'll hear the story. If you have seen it, this might be a little bit boring, or you might enjoy my take on it. And if you want to see it, well, I'm going to spoil the ending for you. So originally, it opened up with Kermit the Frog doing a little sort of top and tail segment. So you get him at the start and you get him at the end. And he also does a little bit of narration throughout it. And it's funny because I thought I had the version with Kermit in. I don't know why I thought that. Apparently, the first bit is him riding a bike down the road and he's talking to the camera about, you know, the story. And I was sure I had that, and I know I've seen it, so I'm guessing I must have looked up those clips on YouTube because I heard about them, but it ain't on my DVD, I'll tell you that for nothing. And I was quite surprised because I'm watching it thinking, hang on, isn't Kermit at the start of this? And that's only this time I noticed it. Yeah, craziness. Certain versions online have got the... I didn't bother looking for those because I've got the DVD, but certain versions online, you might find the bits with Kermit in. They were taken off because of when the Muppets were sold to Disney. Then we have Emmett Otter and his mum, and they're rowing down the river singing about Grandma's swimsuit. And it sounds like Grandma was a larger lady. So it sounds like a bit of fat shaming going on, really. I don't know if you'd get away with that in this day and age, but I'll play a little bit of the song for you. Have a listen to this.
Even so, it was her bathing suit that made her famous. It was almost heaven sent. times when it was drying on the line, a tourist would mistake it for a circus tent.
Now, I'm not going to go into all the voices, but this is a bit interesting because I was watching the making of version, and originally when they made it, Frank Oz was the puppeteer for Ma Otter, so he's doing the voice. And then when it came down to getting the audio, he was replaced by Marilyn Sokol, who does the voice of Ma Otter and does the singing and everything. Now, in this special, they use three different types of puppeteering. They use the regular style of Muppets, where the scenes are all raised up and the performers are underneath with their arm up inside the puppet. But then they also have bits where they use marionettes and also radio controlled bits as well. So this bit where they're rowing is interspersed with radio controlled bits and regular Muppet stuff. And in the making of it, sort of shows you how they did it. It's very clever work they did. So when Emmett is rowing, his arms are sort of motorized to be rowing those oars. So then they go down the river and they're taking some laundry to Gretchen Fox, who says she's going to pay next week, and she's annoyed because there was like an ironing mark on one of her sheets or something. So Ma Otter's a bit annoyed because she's not going to get her money till next week and she's got to get less money. And then they go and see Will Possum, and they swap some socks that Ma has knitted for some pumpkins. And there's a nice little line. Actually, I'll play it for you. Have a listen to this.
Can you make much money on those pumpkin pies, Ma?
Oh, about enough to buy wool for another pair of socks, I guess.
Good thinking, Ma. Now you can knit more socks to buy more pumpkins, to sell more pies, to buy more wool.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so we get the idea that they're not exactly rich. Then we cut to the River Bottom gang or band, and they go driving into town and they go into this music shop and they're playing all the instruments and playing their like heavy metal in there. And Emmett and his mum like, are walking down the street to the music stop, and they stop outside and, oh, what's that noise? And the drum comes rolling out and sort of lands on the pavement in front of them. And apparently this scene took 233 takes to get the drum right. And there was a YouTube clip that became really popular of them doing the scene over and over again. And I can imagine if you're a puppeteer with your arm in the air trying to be Emmett and Ma Otter, your arm's going to get really, really tired. And they got it in the end, not quite how they wanted it, but they got it good enough. And then the River Bottom band leave, and they're the bad guys. They're obviously the bad guys. There's no doubt about that. And the way Ma refers to them as River Bottom people sort of suggests they're, you know, a bit rough. So then they're rowing home and they're singing this song about there ain't no hole in your washtub. Have a listen to this.
Lunch at the upper crust, dinner at the club, high on the hog when there ain't no hole in the washtub.
Watermelon gardens, berries on a shrub, cookies in the kitchen when there ain't no hole in the washtub.
And that's a bit of foreshadowing because, you know, having a wash tub with no hole in means you can do your washing, and obviously that's how Ma earns a living. There's a nice bit here, actually. I really like this. They row past Wendell, who's Emmett's mate, and he's a porcupine, and he's caught a boot. He's really chuffed with himself. He goes, oh, they're biting today. Then they row past Doc Bullfrog, and he says this.
There go two of the nicest folk on the river.
Yeah, I really like that line. It's just nice. He seems like a really good character, Doc Bullfrog does. Then after that, Wendell goes round to Emmett's. He's like, oh, I've got a job for old lady Possum. She wants us to mend her fence. Now, Wendell hasn't got any tools, but Emmett has. So he says, you know, I'll split it with you if we can use your tools. And as they're walking to go and do this job, fixing the fence, Wendell mentions to Emmett about this talent show that's going on in the nearby town of Waterville, where you can win $50. And Emmett's like, oh, that'd be nice, because he wants to buy a present for his mum for Christmas. And apparently they had to hock her piano, then he's thinking he'd like to get a piano for his mum. Meanwhile, this is going on. Hetty Muskrat, who's a friend of Ma Otter's, she's talking about the talent show to Ma Otter, and she's thinking, oh, I'd like to get something for Emmett for Christmas. When they were in town earlier, she saw this guitar in the window of the music shop that was $40. So she still have $10 left over. Yeah. Anyway, then Wendell and Emmett, as they're walking along, meet two other guys. It's hard to tell what all these animals are. They're all different shapes, and you can sort of get a rough idea. I'm pretty sure one of these is a groundhog. Not sure what the other one is. Looks a lot like a possibly a beaver, or maybe it's an otter as well. I don't know. Could be some sort of water rat. Anyway, they're saying, oh, we're going to start up a jug band. Why don't you two join in? One of them plays the washboard, another one plays the cigar box banjo, Wendell's going to play the jug, and they need a wash tub bass. And Emmett's like, well, I can't do that because I'd have to put a hole in the wash tub to make a bass. Anyway, then Emmett's there fixing the fence with Wendell, and I love this bit because he's there hammering nails into his fence, and there's like three nails all banged in but all bent out of shape and in the wrong place. It just looks very funny, the job him and Wendell are trying to do on this fence for old lady Possum, who's going to pay him 50 cents, by the way, not a lot of cash for a complete rebuild of a fence. On the way home, Emmett gets a Christmas branch, so I don't get a Christmas tree, he gets a Christmas branch, and there's a good reason for that, and let me play why. Have a listen to this.
Even if we don't have presents, at least we can have the branch.
It's a nice one, Emmett.
Just like Pa used to bring home.
Yep. Every year he'd go out vowing he was going to bring home a real whole Christmas tree. But he never had the heart to do it.
And every year he'd say, because I didn't cut it down, the rest of that tree will still be alive in 100 years.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. Nice little idea, that. And then Emma's like, oh, is it time for us to go on Pa's ice slide? And Marlott was like, oh yeah, it's all frozen out there. Yeah, we can. So the river's frozen now. Originally, I'm watching it thinking, what, is that meant to be like ice? But I think he'd actually made a slide, Emmett's dad had, out of rubber sheeting that you'd slide down when it's frosty onto the ice and you'd slide across it. And there's some dodgy marionette work here where they're sort of sitting on the ice and they stand up. Pretty much the way they stand up is defying the laws of gravity because they're on strings. Yeah, some of the marionette work, you know, like when they're walking down the street and their legs are moving before the body looks a bit shady as well. It's a shame because it's nice seeing them walking along rather than just, you know, half the body like you'd normally get with the Muppets, but it doesn't look natural. So anyway, at this point, they've been going down the slide and they're talking about Pa again, who's passed away. And they're sort of thinking, well, what would Pa do? Because Ma, she wants to perform in the talent show because she wants to sing, but she hasn't got an outfit for it. And then she thinks, well, maybe. And this is the gift of the Magi bit here coming in, right? So she's thinking, well, if I sacrifice Emmett's tools and I put them in Hawk, then I could win the competition and get the tools back. It's like, wait, so she's not actually sacrificing anything of her own, she's sacrificing Emmett's tools. That's not what happens in The Gift of the Magi, and I've seen a number of versions of it, you know, like the original book I've read, but also the Mickey and Minnie version in Once Upon a Christmas, or the one on Christmas in Sesame Street, and they're sacrificing something of their own, while in this one, Emmett is going to put a hole in the blooming wash tub, sacrificing his mother's livelihood. Yeah, bit blooming cheeky if you ask me. Interesting take on a classic. But yeah, I like this because they're thinking, well, what would Pa do? Pa was an imbecile, and Pa would, because the whole point with Pa was that he was a snake oil salesman, but the joke is nobody wants their snakes oiled these days. Hilarious. Do you know what? I'll tell you something, actually. I actually bought some snake oil once. Yeah, well, I say snake oil. I think it was snake oil. I had it for years. I was in Peru. I was backpacking and I was in this town and there was someone there actually selling, but I think it was snake oil, like pots of wax. I don't know what it's supposed to do, but there's loads of people gathered around and he had like some snakes and some other sort of lizards there, and he was getting out these pots of wax, which were probably just paraffin wax, I don't know, but loads of people were buying it, and I thought it was cheap, super cheap, you know, like probably less than a quid. I thought, wow, why not? I've never bought snake oil before. It's a new experience. So I bought it and I had it for years. And I think I used to put it on my face. No idea what I thought it was for, because I couldn't speak Spanish. So the guys there giving this speech were in the market where everyone's gathered round. And loads of people bought snake oil and I bought it as well. Although it wasn't oil, it was wax, was it? It was like a little tin, like boot wax. Anyway, that's my story of snake oil, which has got nothing to do with Christmas and very little to do with what I'm talking about. Back to what I was saying, they're both thinking, what would Pa do? Yeah, well, clearly that's the best course of action. That's why we're so rich. Do what Pa did. Oh, hang on a minute. We're incredibly poor. Let's still do what Pa did. Then they sing this song, which is Pa's favourite song.
Though our minds be filled with questions, in our hearts we'll understand. When the river
Yeah, recognise that? You might do. It's not a Christmas song, but it's on the John Denver and the Muppets Christmas special. Nice song, that one. Then there's a scene where Emmett takes the wash tub and he actually bangs the nail into it. It's not particularly well done, that bit of it. You know, you can tell the nail hasn't actually gone in the wash tub because there's a Muppet hitting a nail with a piece of wood into a wash tub. Anyway, then we cut to him practicing and they're singing a song called Barbecue, and it's a nice song. And also at this point I should say all the songs in this were written by Paul Williams, and you might not think you're familiar with Paul Williams, but he wrote a lot of classic songs over the years. He wrote Rainy Days and Mondays Always Get Me Down, or Bring Me Down, or Do Something to Me. But he also wrote all the songs for A Muppet's Christmas Carol, and they're all classics. Anyway, we get the practice where the jug band are playing Barbecue, and this is on the day of the competition. Now, there's a scene now where the Riverbottom gang go past, and Emmett and his mates, they're practicing in this sort of treehouse, or like a cabin that's raised up off the ground, and they look out the window, and the Riverbottom band come by, and they're all on jet skis. They've got like three jet skis. I should have mentioned this, actually. So the Riverbottom band, the main one looks like a bear, but I don't think he is a bear, because he'd be a lot bigger than all the other critters. Anyway, you got him, you've got another one that looks like a weasel of some sort, then you've got a snake, a lizard, and also a fish who's always in like a bucket of water, or they've got like a tank in the back of the car earlier, and in this one, yeah, he's in a bucket being dragged along on the back of one of these jet skis, and they sort of shout some rude stuff up at Emmett and his mates up in their little cabin. And then we cut to the contest. So the contest, I really like this bit actually. As everyone's coming in, you got Harrison Fox, he's the compere. He's telling, oh, ladies go on the left side, gentlemen on the right side, ladies on the left side. And they're sort of coming in and going either side. And then you get this, like a pantomime horse, you know, that kind of horse where it's a costume. You've got one person at the front, one person at the back. And they come in and they have to split up and go into different directions because it's a man and a lady in there. And I found that very funny. Yeah. Although, not as funny as when they're actually on stage, because they're the first act. I really did like this, because it's just these two halves, but they come on separately and they're sort of dancing around, and then one falls over and then the other one just dances off stage, and one who's fallen over is led on his back, sort of kicking his legs to sort of push himself back off the along the floor out of the scene. That was the best bit in the whole thing for me. I really loved that. Then you get Yancey Woodchuck comes on and he's got his banjo and he starts singing, and the song he sings is Barbecue. And it's like, oh, no! But that's what Emma and his gang are going to sing. And they're like, oh no, if we sing that, people are going to think we're copying them. So they got to come up with a new song. So they go outside and that's what they do. They write a new song out in the alleyway at the back. Then we get a couple more acts. You get George and Melissa Rabbit and they're dancing, and that's quite good. Actually, you know, I said there's three types of puppeteering on this. Isn't that? There's a fourth type as well. Now, I forget what it's called, but this is the one where you've got like a black backdrop and people dressed in black, and so they're moving the puppets behind so you can actually get the puppets to move off the ground and stuff. I forget what, I should look it up, but I'm not going to bother. But it's that kind of puppeteering as well. So yeah, we've got four different types of puppeteering. Really good. That's quite good. They're doing their dancing together. Then you get these squirrels, and I'm not sure if they're going to be acrobats or dancers or what they are, but they're just all sort of flipping and flying all over the stage. It's not in synchronization or anything, but they seem to be having fun, and that's the important thing, kids. And what's cool is when it finishes, you can tell their mum loves it because she's pretty much the one clapping and cheering louder than anyone else. Have a listen. Yeah, she's happy. Then Ma Otter comes out and she sings Our World. And have a listen to this.
Our world says welcome, stranger. Everybody's a friend. Favorite stories don't end in our world.
And the audience absolutely love it, mainly because all the other acts have been pretty naff. But they love that one, and the audience are going wild, and that's good. And then you get the Frogtown Hollow Jug Band. This is Emmett and his gang, and they sing a song called Brothers, which they've just written. I'll play a little bit.
How much alike we are. Perhaps we're long-lost brothers. We even think the same. You know there may be others. We can always use a friend. This family just keeps growing. This family doesn't have to end.
And again, the crowd go absolutely wild, and it's like, oh, it's definitely going to be between one of these two. But then Harrison Fox comes out and says, oh, we wouldn't normally do this, but we've got one more last edition, and this is the Nightmare Band. And they play this.
We do anything that we wish. We got no respect for animal, birdie, or fish.
The grass does not grow on the places where we stop and stand.
River Bottom Nightmare Band.
Yeah, I don't think it's a particularly good song. What's good is when they're playing. You've got that fish. He's in his tank. He's not actually playing an instrument or anything. He's just swishing around in the tank and jumping up and down. Swishing around and sort of coming out of the water and back in again. And during the making of documentary I was watching, one of the puppeteers was saying all the water was just splashing over the tank to the puppeteers below that are trying to perform their puppets, the other band members. Yeah. And the audience absolutely love it. Now, at this point, I want to point something out. So this River Bottom Band suggests that they're, you know, from the rough end of town or from a rough town. But they must have plenty of money because old Ma and Emmett, all they've got is a little rowboat and a shack. Well, these River Bottom gang, they've got a car, they've got three jet skis, and their equipment for the band is pretty impressive as well. They've got like lights, they've got all their amps and their electric music and that. So I don't know how rough this part of town is, but however rough it is, they're doing pretty well for themselves. And then Doc Bullfrog comes up and reveals the winner, and it's the Nightmare Band. And I remember first time watching it, I go, what? Yeah, but what? That, what? Oh, what? Yeah. Oh. Well, outside, Mark Otter, Emmett and his band, they're all sat outside looking a bit dejected. And they both admit what they did about hocking his tools and putting a hole in the wash tub. And, yeah, they're pretty sad. And Doc Bullfrog comes out and says, oh, you did well, but you were just lacking that certain something. So they're walking back. And they're walking back along the river because the river's frozen. They stop as they're walking and they do a mashup of their two songs. So you've got Our World that Ma Otter was singing and Brothers that the jug band was singing. And they mash them together. Have a listen.
We're closer now than ever before.
How much alike we are. Perhaps we're long-lost brothers.
There's love in our world and we're showing it more.
We even think the same. You know there may be others.
So they're singing that, and Doc Bullfrog, they're just outside Doc Bullfrog's Riverside restaurant, and he comes out and he hears it. He's like, oh, why don't you come and sing in the restaurant? You could be regular entertainment. I'll give you a job and I'll give you free meals. And they start that very night. So they go in and that's the next scene, is them singing in the restaurant. Yeah, and the audience are absolutely loving it. And then they carry on walking home and they sing The River Meets the Sea again. And that's how it ends. Them singing The River Meets the Sea on the frozen river. And here's the thing, boys and girls. I absolutely love the way this looks. It's really nostalgic looking back at this kind of puppeteering, which you don't see very much of these days. The sets they've built are really elaborate and fantastic, and the whole thing's got this wonderful feel to it. But the story, I'm so annoyed that the River Bottom Nightmare Band won the competition. Yeah, it just really upsets me. Like, they got all this money, they're a bunch of assholes, and they go and win, and I know at the end Emmett and his mum, they get a job performing music, but how long is it going to take him to save up and buy that new guitar? And I think that's why I don't watch it that often. Most years I don't put it on at all. I've watched it, in fact, before watching it this last week for this episode, I don't remember the last time I watched it. Yeah, I watched it the first year, probably the second year, and then put it aside for a while. Yeah, but it's so cute. You know, the animals in it, the puppets are great, but just the storyline really bugs me. So, back in the early 2000s, they made a stage musical of it by the Henson Company, which included real live people dressed up as the characters, but also with Muppets as well that they're interacting with. But then, back in 2019, it was announced that Brett McKenzie, who was from Flight of the Conchords and who'd written the songs for the Muppets movie, the more recent one, he was writing a script and songs for a new film adaptation of it. But that was nearly 7 years ago, so I'm guessing that ain't happening. But there it is, boys and girls. If you haven't watched it, you definitely should check it out. It is a delightful little thing, but the story really bugs me. sadly. One last thing before we move on. If you want to learn even more about this special, then you should check out the Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas episode of Mike Westphal's Advent Calendar House podcast. He goes into it much more in depth, and you'll probably learn a thing or two. It's a really good episode, so check that out. It was 7 years ago, so I didn't feel like I was treading on his toes talking about the same special. Yeah, but check that out. Now, boys and girls, we're doing this. So, boys and girls, a couple of my more recent recommendations have been radio shows / podcasts called Just a Minute and The Unbelievable Truth. Now, there's a chap who's been on a number of those shows called Tony Hawks. Not Tony Hawk, the skateboarder. This is Tony Hawks, the stand-up comedian. Now, I was aware of his work. He's fairly popular, not a massive star, but he's on a lot of panel shows. And I always liked his work, the stuff he did and that. But just recently, listening to these shows, I've heard a lot more from him. And I remembered that he'd written a book called Round Ireland in a Fridge. Now, this is the deal. Years ago, he'd been over in Ireland, and he'd been driving along, and he'd seen a man by the side of the road hitchhiking with a fridge. And he thought, who's going to pick up a guy hitchhiking with a fridge? And he was retelling this story at a dinner party years later. And a guy was there going, yeah, I don't believe that. And Tony's like, no, I saw it. I didn't imagine it. I was driving along, I saw it. And they had a bit of an argument, like a friendly argument. And eventually they made a bet for £100. And Tony Hawk bet that he could go around the circumference of Ireland with a fridge. And that's what he did. And he wrote a book about his experiences. This was back in the 90s when he wrote it. And I was familiar with it when it happened, but I was never that interested in it then. But just recently, hearing him on the radio, it sort of revived my interest. And I thought, do you know what? I'll listen to the audiobook of that. And I have, and it's really good. And it's called Round Ireland with a Fridge by Tony Hawks. And if you want to check it out, it's on Audible. And you can have a listen. Or if you want to buy the book, you'll probably get a second-hand copy on eBay for a couple of quid. This was really popular at the time. Became a mild sensation. And they actually made a film version of it as well. And if you want to watch the film version, well, boys and girls, that's on YouTube and it's free. So, yeah, check that out as well. So that's this episode's recommendation. Round Ireland with a Fridge by Tony Hawks. It's 20-odd years old, but it's certainly worth checking out. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a big thank you to Bob Baker, as ever, for his fantastic segments. And also, I want to say thank you to everyone who sent in their quiz scores. Boys and girls, remember to send in your quiz scores this week. It's very important. It's not that important, but it's a little bit important. Actually, it's not important at all. Just do it. There you go. It's easy. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, boys and girls, you know I love ya. Merry Happy Christmas!
Can I refill your eggnog for you? Get you something to eat? Drive you out to the middle of nowhere? Leave you for dead?
No, I'm doing just fine, Clark.